of your alcoholic.
Hey,
everybody. Welcome to the newcomers, anybody that's fairly new to AA. If you've already started to read the big book, you know about our founders, Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob. When I came into AA, I loved to read. I was a reader before I ever got in AA, and AA has a lot of literature. And after I read the big book, like in 4 or 5 days, I sought out more literature. And I found out that there's an autobiography of our founder, Bill Wilson. And then there's also a book called Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. And in that book, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, he says that the newcomer is the most important person in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the reason why that person is the most important person is because if you stay sober, we see a miracle happen. But if you decide to drink again, we see the disease in action. Either way, you're a benefit to us. And so we hope you stay and become a miracle. And that's what happened to me. My sobriety date is April the 28th, 1990. That's my real sobriety date, but I came to AA one time before that. And I'm going to share about that before it'll lead into April 28th. So, you know, I used to talk a lot about all my drinking at the beginning. And I spoke here 9 years ago at the Ice House. And when I had done that, I had been on a journey that particular year. I spoke 12 times all over California. In fact, I was at the Ice House speaking, and somebody from Hemet asked me to go speak in Hemet. And it was just a magical year. And there was my late girlfriend, her name is Kelly. She passed away 8 years ago. And it was shortly after going to about 4 or 5 speaker meetings with me, she told me, Javier, why don't you cut out all that first part of your talk and get right to the meat? And so I took her advice, and after that, it's always been like that. So when I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 22 years old. And I got here, I'm the kind of guy that when I drank, I used to throw myself up to drink more. That's how I built my stamina for drinking more and more beers. Is after about a 12-pack, I'd go like this, and I would throw it up, and then I would drink more, and I would drink 18, 19, 20, 21 beers. I was always going for the newest record. And, you know, and I would do that without passing out. I would do that without blacking out. The only times I black out is when I started to drink a little tequila with the beer. And then I didn't know what happened. So I used to be able to gauge that as I was growing up. I'm talking about 18, 19, 20. About 21 years old, the throw-up started coming without me using my fingers. And it would come, I couldn't tell you when. It might come after the 6th beer, it might come after the 9th beer. But I would all of a sudden feel it, and I'd have to relieve myself, and I'd throw up. And I didn't realize that was a nice sign that, Javier, you're becoming an alcoholic. But I didn't pay attention to the signs. So I had this a couple of instances. One of them was drinking after a softball game with my boss and his wife and my boss and some friends. And we're sitting at this table, and I go to get the first beer, and I drink the beer, And I kid you not, it just started coming up. One beer. And so I headed to the restroom, and as I'm headed to the restroom, all of a sudden I let go. Projectile out of my mouth. And as I'm projectiling, my boss's wife is coming out of the bathroom door, and it splats all over her feet. And she was so gracious, and somebody saw it and was right there cleaning up. And I went to the restroom, I cleaned up, and then I went back to the table, and my wife said to me, "Let's go." And I said, "Okay," you know, reluctantly, and I left with her. And the next day I had to be at work because I couldn't call in sick. And she and her husband worked with me. And they said it here. They said, "Pitiful and comprehensible demoralization." Where I got sober at, they used to say that that's worse than feeling less than a pregnant ant. Do you feel that low? Less than a pregnant ant. That's pretty low. And that's the way I felt. I could not take my head out of my computer. I could not look anybody in the eye. I was afraid that I was going to get in trouble. I was afraid someone was going to say something to me. And nobody said anything to me. That was one example. Another example was having blood in my stool and looking at it and getting scared and thinking, what should I do? You know, called up the doctor, and the doctor sent me to go get an x-ray done. It's called a barren enema. And they stick this thing, they probe you into your rectum, and they put some stuff into your stomach. And the doctor ended up telling me, he said to me, he goes, you have a little tear in your stomach. He says, that's usually caused by drinking. How do you drink? And I told him that, you know, I drink tequila. And I told him that I drink beer. And he says, "Well, don't drink the tequila. It's okay to drink beer." But I didn't tell him how many beers I drank. And so that was another warning sign. But those weren't enough for me. What were the real warning signs that started to happen for me were the shakes. The shakes would hit me at about 3 p.m. And they would start with a tingling sensation at the back of my head. And the back of my head would just be tingling, tingling. And then I would start to feel my heart thumping. And then I'd start to feel sweaty. And then I started to feel that same uneasiness all over my body. And I'm starting to feel it right now as I'm explaining it. And at 5:00, I'd hit my car, and I worked in Pomona. I don't know if any of you are familiar with the Kellogg Interchange, all those freeways all intersecting. I worked in a corporate headquarters that was right there by a place called Focus on the Family. And when you left the parking lot, you wind your way around and you go over this overpass over the 10 freeway called the Ganesha Boulevard. And then when you went over Ganesha Boulevard, you'd land on, I believe it's Town Avenue or Gary Avenue. And that road would lead you to Foothill Boulevard right by the Pomona Valley Fairgrounds. And so I would get in my car and I'd be shaking. I'd drive all the way to the corner of Foothill Boulevard and let's just call it Town Avenue. And there was a 7-Eleven right on the corner, and I'd buy a 6-pack of tall can buds and a big gulp. And one tall can bud fits perfectly in a big gulp. And in that traffic, it's like stop and go traffic. So you didn't really have to worry about cops. You just had to, you know, and so I'd keep my big gulp. The cans would be under the seat. I would drink, get it drunk. And by the time I made it home, which is about a half an hour, 40 minutes, I'd have the 6-pack done. And then I'd hit the tequila. And then smoke a little weed. And that's how I operated. And that's how I operated when I had money. I couldn't do it every day. And so there was this one day where these feelings I described hit me. And I was scared because I was thinking, something wrong with me? Am I having a heart attack or a stroke or something? And I was just freaking out while I was driving. I drove myself into the San Antonio Hospital in Upland, California. And I got there and emergency room, they checked me out. And the nurse told me, Javier, there's nothing wrong with you. Tests are coming out negative. You're fine.
Okay, credit for it.
So I ended up going back, going home and, just anxiety ridden, but I made it through the night. Next day at work, I'm okay to start the day. 3 o'clock happens. Same thing happens. Back to the San Antonio Hospital. Same emergency nurse. Same emergency doctor. The nurse says to me, Javier, you're okay. There's nothing wrong with you. But the doctor wants to know, how do you drink? And for the first time in my life, I told the truth. I told her how much I drank. I told her the pills I used. I told her about the marijuana that I smoked. And she went to the doctor and she came back and she says, Javier, the doctor says that it sounds like you're an alcoholic and you're suffering from withdrawals. You should go to Alcoholics Anonymous. They can help you there. And so I left that hospital and I went home and I told my wife, and I was so gung-ho, I looked up AA. I found out that there was an AA meeting that was close to my office, and it turned out to be what's called the Triangle Club. And so when I described going to the liquor store, going to 7-Eleven, going over Ganesha Boulevard, and then hitting Town Avenue, and then if I go to the left, there's the Pomona Valley Fairgrounds, but the Triangle Club was right smack there on the other side of the street, and it just had a triangle, and it said club underneath it. And I used to always wonder, what is that club? And then I get directed there, and I found out that it was a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. So this is the story I wanted to tell you about my first time in AA. Because the first time in AA, I went there completely out of fear of what alcohol was doing to me. I was afraid. And so I went. I took the doctor's orders and I went. Now, our big book says that fear is not enough to keep you from drinking again. Fear of what alcohol does to you. Because, I mean, you could be really fearful, really scared. I'm not ever going to do that shit again. I don't want to go through that again. But the problem is that we have fast forgetters. We forget. We forget the pain. That's why you hear old-timers always say, don't forget your last drunk. Because if you've forgotten your last drunk, you may have not taken your last drink. So don't forget it. So I went into Alcoholics Anonymous full of fear. And I got into that first meeting, and I'm sitting in a suit because it's right on my way to work. And I realized very quickly that I'm around a bunch of people that don't wear suits. But I didn't really care about that. What I really cared about was I wanted to stop shaking. But I would do nothing else than show up and take space. That's all I did. I did nothing else. I didn't get a big book. I didn't get a 12x12 book. I didn't get any of the free pamphlets. I didn't get a meeting schedule. I didn't get a phone list. I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't make any friends. I was the last one to get into the meeting right when it started. I was the first one to get the hell out of the meeting as soon as it ended. I did nothing. And I did that every day. I did it for 60 straight days. Somewhere around 50 days, I started to feel better. I realized that I wasn't shaking anymore. I realized that I felt healthy again. And then that's when I started to think. There's an old timer in Fresno. His name is Tomas. And Tomas always likes to say that stinking thinking leads to drinking. And that's exactly what happened to me. Because the big book says that our drinking centers in our minds. So I started thinking about drinking while I was sitting in meetings. There might be one of you here doing that tonight. So I was sitting in the meeting thinking about drinking. I started to think about how I was going to do it. I started thinking, you know what, I'm not really as bad as all these people. Look at them. They're fucking losers. And then I started to think to myself, I'm not as bad as them. Like I just had some bad luck. And then I convinced myself, you know what? I'm going to drink again. I'm going to go back to Fresno. I'm going to drink with my brother-in-law and the guys who were at my wedding, my buddies. And I'm only going to drink a six-pack, and I'm not going to have another drink until my birthday on May 23rd. And then I convinced my wife that that's what I was going to do. She said, okay, she co-signed it. So I remember being in the meeting and never, ever speaking up and saying, this is what my mind is telling me to do. And so that's what I did. I drove all the way to Fresno. And you would think, you know, if you already made the decision to drink at Fresno, why don't you just have a couple of drinks of Pomona before you go? But I didn't. I drove all the way to Fresno. We went to a party. And I was only going to drink a six-pack, just like I said. I was at the party. My wife knew it. She was there. My brother-in-law, friends. We were with some other people that I didn't know. And I had that first beer in my hand. Now, I think that the most important part of the big book is on the bottom of page 43. At the bottom of page 43, it says that the time will come when we will be defenseless against the first drink. No human power can save us. Our defense must come from a higher power. Now, I'll talk more about that in a little bit. But at that moment when I had the beer in my hand, it was a cold Bud bottle. And the cold bottle, the wrapper around it that you could read, that was peeling. And when I popped that cap off, the froth came out. And I was holding that beer for probably what felt like a minute. It's a long time to hold a beer. But I was saying this to myself in my mind, should I do this or shouldn't I? I started to have this war, you know, should I or shouldn't I? Should I or shouldn't I? But remember, I had no defense because I had not worked on shit in those 2 months. And finally I said the magic drinking words, fuck it. I had that six pack done in about 8 minutes. And then I was on to what I normally do. Drank about 19, 20 beers that night. Had a couple of shots of tequila. Smoked a little dope. I could tell you that I was as sober that night as I am right now. I could not get over the edge. And I loved how they talked about having a bad case of the jitters. Because I equate the jitters to the description that I explained to you about how I felt that led me to the hospital. The next morning, I'll just say that night, I hopped my car up onto a curb. I got into a fight with my wife. I started a fight with a stranger that my brother-in-law took care of. We argued the whole way back home. The next day when I got up, the shakes were hitting me 10 times harder than what put me into the hospital. And that's the scary thing, was when you really know. I knew now. I knew. And that next morning by 11 o'clock, everybody was heading over to the San Joaquin River to go barbecue and drink. And I went and I did not take a drink because I did not want to be an alcoholic. I was going to prove it. I was not going to drink again until my birthday on May 23rd. And within about 3 days, I was drunk again. And, you know, because of the time limits, I'm going to really fast forward my surrender, because there's a lot of things that happened. I just relive every year before April the 28th, the month before I turn the next year of sobriety, I relive those last 30 days. Now, I drank again at the beginning of March, so I drank the whole month of March into the month of April and then got sober on April the 28th. And I relive those weeks. The most profound thing was that, you know, I was at a party with my wife and with people that I worked with and their wives. And it started out as a cool party, everybody partying, right? But at some point, it was just me at the table with a bottle of booze. And they were all sitting around on couches watching TV. And my wife says to me, "Javier, it's time to go. These people want to go to sleep." And I said, "Okay, Neil, just one more drink," as I poured myself another drink. And then she got up and she walked over to me and she slammed her hand down on the table. She says, "Javier, these people want to go to bed now. We need to leave now." And I said a smart-ass remark, "Well, gosh, I mean, you don't have to be so rude about it." Yeah. But that's what it took to get my attention. So we got up and we left, and I said, "Stop at the store." And I walked out of the store with a 40-ouncer. And she left the next day. And I was at home alone for about a week. And so when I took my last drink on April the 27th, it was with a guy that I didn't really like. I ended up, we road share together. We drive to work together. We come back. We get an extra $250 a month to do that. So he says to me as he's pulling up, "Hey, you want to split a 12-pack? I said, "Sure." So we both drink a 6-pack. I drink a 6-pack with him. Non-memorable. I go home. You know, I drink my tequila shots, I smoke some weed, and I pass out. You know, if I knew that was going to be the last time I was ever going to drink, it would have been a party. But I had no idea. The next morning when I woke up, I thought to myself, "I need to call in sick." And then I thought, "I'm out of booze. I need to go to the store." And then I thought, "God help me." And that's when I surrendered. I didn't know it right then, because the way God works with me is always in retrospect. But at that moment, that's when the thought came into my mind. Haven't they been talking about some phone number that you can call at the Pomona Valley Hospital? So I found this number. Then they said, "Come down to the Pomona Valley Hospital. Your insurance is taken here. Come do an intake." And I went down there. And they said, "Come on in. You know, you're definitely an alcoholic. You can go ahead and join us." And I said, "Well, let me go talk to my boss." So I went to the corporation I work at. I found my boss. And I told him, I said, "George, I go, I have a problem with drinking. I went to AA before and they couldn't help me. And our insurance covers me to be in this 28-day program. At the Pomona Valley Hospital." He said, "Javier, go take care of yourself. You'll still have your job when you get back." So I drove home. I went home and told my wife. That was on April the 28th. And I checked into the treatment facility the next morning. And I could tell you that the best thing that that treatment facility did for me was that they put me in an AA meeting every morning at 6:30 a.m. and a meeting at 6:30 at night, every night. And they gave me a big book. And it was in the morning meeting where I met the men that saved my life. Most of them are dead today. I was 23 years old when I got sober. Sometimes people say to me, Man, you got young. You got sober pretty young. Until they hear me tell what I just told you guys. Then they understand. I hit it really hard. But because I hit it really hard and I suffered greatly, God gave me the grace of sobriety. And with this grace of sobriety, I've been able to live a life that I never dreamed possible. That I could do a whole speaker meeting on gratitude and all the gifts that I've gotten in sobriety. But those men saved my life. And they weren't nice to me. They were loving, but they weren't nice. And they brought me up in a certain way of AA. And it was called Tough Love AA. And so some people can't stomach that. And but that's exactly what I needed. And so a lot of times when I'm sponsoring people, I have to kind of judge and see, are these people, are they like me? Do they need the tough love the way that it was given to me? Or do I need to be a little bit more laid back with them? I don't know. Each person is different. But this was the way they were with me. So when I got in, I started going to meetings every day. He had to. It was in my fourth meeting that I got my sponsor, a guy named Gilbert. Tall, good-looking Mexican man. And Gilbert, you know, he got called on to share one day. And at that meeting, when he shared this. He shared that it didn't matter how far down the road that you have gone, that God will always take you back if you ask him to. And when he said that, it's as though he talked directly to my heart. And I felt myself well up. And after the meeting, I went right up to him and I said, hey, Gilbert, you know, I'm Javier. I'm looking for a sponsor. Would you sponsor me? He says, yeah, I'll sponsor you. He said to me, do you have a big book? I said, yeah. He said, are you literate? I said, yeah, I am. He goes, so you can comprehend what you read? I said, yeah. He goes, okay, I want you to start reading the big book. Read about 5 pages, and then I want you to call me. He gave me his phone number. He said, when you call me, you leave a message for me. Back then, there were answering machines. And I said, okay. And so I would leave him a message, and then usually it might take him a day or two to get back with me. It wasn't instant like today with cell phones, you know. So he'd get back with me. And so I started learning how to get out of myself by calling him. And then talking to him about the pages that we read. You know, and so he started taking me through the first and the second step. When I was about 4 months sober, he disappeared. Okay, now, I'll go back into that in a second. Before I made another treatment program, you know, when I just got Gilbert as a sponsor, in the treatment facility, this is how we were. We had these wristbands. And in Southern California, you could raise your hand and they'll call on you to share. And so all of us in the back row with these wristbands all wanted to share about whatever was being talked about. And so, and I was one of them. I was guilty of it. And so there was this one meeting with this guy, Carmen, got called on to share. And Carmen wore a 3-piece suit. He had a beautiful haircut. He was about, at that time, he was probably about 40, 45 years old. And Carmen, man, at the time, he was 17 years sober. And he carried a freaking message. He carried this message that was so powerful. And it was probably about the third or fourth time I heard him share. So I decided to go say to him, hey, Carmen, I really love what you had to share. Get the fuck away from me. You're going to be drunk in 30 days. And he turned around and walked away from me. And I was like, what the fuck? Wow. Okay. So, but I'm a salesman. Okay. All my life. That's what I've been in nothing but sales. So I'm used to rejection. And I know that it's a numbers game. You know, the more attempts you make, the higher your chances are of making the sale, including with women. So, Oh gosh, I need to say that. Scratch that from the tape. All right. So a couple of days later, he shares again, and it's powerful. And I think to myself, okay, he just was having a bad day. So I went up to him again. I said, hey, Carmen, you must have been having a bad day the other day. I just want to tell you what a great share you had today again. He says, take the fucking cotton out of your ears and stick it in your mouth. You don't know shit. You think you know, but you don't know shit. Get away from me. Walked away again. Now I got hurt. So I went to my sponsor. Now, Gilbert's been my sponsor for about 7 or 8 days, maybe. And I tell Gilbert what happened. And I didn't know that Carmen was his sponsor. And Gilbert was really kind to me. He said to me, Javier, he's right. You're constantly talking about things that you haven't worked on with me. You're constantly raising your hand. He said, what you need to do is start being quiet. And you wait to be called upon. When you're called upon, it's God's will. When you share, you don't share about the 10th step because we're not on it. You share on the first step that we're working on and let them know where you're at and how you got here. That's what you do. And as we move along in the steps, then you'll be able to talk about those steps. And so that's what I started to do. I learned how to listen. When I got 30 days of sobriety, they had me chair the meeting from up front, in front of everybody. I got my 30-day chip. I was the 5-minute leader. I'm dressed in my suit, ready to go back to work. And I'm afraid to go back to work. And I sat in the chair, and when it was time for me to start talking, I started to weep. And I just wept. Because I was so afraid. And I wept for about 2 minutes. And then I looked up and I said, thanks for letting me share. And the room erupted in laughter. And when the meeting was over, Carmen was the first one to come up to me and hug me and tell me, you're going to be okay, kid. That's what I mean about tough love. So, when Gilbert disappeared, when I was about 4 months sober, four or maybe 5 months sober, Carmen stepped in. And when I ended up hanging out with him almost daily, I ended up working the third step with him. And then when I approached 1 year of sobriety, Gilbert came back to the meetings. Carmen kind of stepped away. And Gilbert was there for my 1 year chip and my 1 year anniversary. And it took me from that point to 2.5 years of sobriety before I actually did my 4-step because I didn't know it then, but I have abandonment issues. I was abandoned by my father. I was abandoned by my mother. And Gilbert abandoned me when he decided to stop coming to the meetings for a while. And so I didn't really trust him. And so I was able to skate on 1-2-3 for 2.5 years. 1-2-3, going to a meeting every day. 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3. But eventually they said, if you don't do the 4-step, you'll drink a 5th. So, you know, and they said, you're going to know when you're starting to feel uncomfortable in sobriety if you don't start to work on your inventory. And so I started to feel uncomfortable. And, okay, so we're coming up on 4 minutes. And Israel told me that if I don't end on time, you guys start booing. So I'll just say that what happened was I was in a speaker meeting, and the speaker said, hey, if you're not doing the 4-step because you don't trust your sponsor with the 5th step, come see me at the break. So I did. I shared with him. He says, you know what? I'll bet you if you share with your sponsor, He's gonna tell you a bunch of things that are gonna make you feel comfortable. And so I followed his advice, and I knocked out my fourth step in about a day and a half. And I gave it to my sponsor, Gilbert, and worked it out with him. And Gilbert's only one of nine sponsors that I've had in my sobriety. They come and they go. You know, we move away, they move away, they die. And every one of them has been important to me and has imparted their Alcoholics Anonymous experience, strength, and hope onto me. And I'm a very grateful man. I'm going to end the last 3 minutes in gratitude and share with you that I have three adult children that were all born in sobriety. I have four grandchildren from those three children. I have a wonderful business. You know, I have a wonderful support group of friends. You know, I'm close to my family. And, you know, I have a life that I couldn't have ever imagined. Now, I didn't always do things right in it. Because the mother of those three kids saw me act stupid and sober. A lot of my wreckage of the past isn't wreckage of the past. It's wreckage of sobriety in my early years because I wouldn't take complete direction from my sponsor. I was very macho. I thought I could do it my way. It's taken years to pound me into submission to learn that my defects of character have always ruled me. Machoism, especially with my wife and how I kept her under my thumb, and eventually she escaped me. And, you know, it saddens me to say that because she was the best woman that I was ever with, the mother of my three kids. And I've had a lot of ups and downs. I had a second marriage to a woman in the program. And after 7 years of marriage, she decided that she was gay. And that one threw me for a loop. And then I met the most wonderful woman that was, I would say, as close to being a soulmate. And I was with her for 18 months, and she got sick with cancer. And she died 72 days later. And so, and since then, I've met a lot of different women, ups and downs. And I currently have a wonderful woman that is in my life. And she lives in Morro Bay, and I live in Fresno, and it's a good, healthy distance. Yeah. And it works well for us because, you know, I'm older now. I'm 55 years old, you know, and she's the same age. And it's a little bit different when you get a little older. And I'm really grateful for the type of relationship that I have with her. We're honest with each other. And so, you know, it takes what it takes. I'll just end with this. So this has been it's been like the stock market, my recovery. Lots of ups and then, but always a steady gain has been my life. Thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.